Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the TNT Hour on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I actually have a co-host with me this afternoon. We are going to bring him on shortly. We apologize for a bit of a technical delay. Streams are not only for fishing and enjoying wildlife. They also have everything to do with bringing this show to your home or wherever you happen to be listening this afternoon. Welcome on this August the 20th, and it's now 1:11, 1:12, actually just flipped over on my atomic clock in the afternoon. What is going on in the world? Well, a very kind and devoted listener to BBS Radio, Renee, sent me an important article, and I felt I should share it with you. This comes from France, of all places, and it's pretty interesting in light of many of the things that we talk about from week to week on this show, as well as on my Evident Footprints show and many of the other fine shows that you hear on BBS Radio. We talk about the issue of mind control and the dumbing down of our kids in school. And this article is called France Bans Broadcast of TV Shows for Babies. Now, keep in mind that we are just reporting the news, but this has a ring of truth and is very supportive of many of the premises that we present, not only on the TNT Hour, but also on my Monday through Friday show at 10 p.m. Pacific, Evident Footprints. This is dated today's date. And since it's coming from France, maybe I should put a bit of a French accent on this. This comes from Gay Paris. France's broadcast authority has banned French channels from airing TV shows aimed at children under 3 years old to shield them from developmental risks. It says television viewing poses at that age. The High Audiovisual Council, in a ruling published Wednesday, said it wanted to protect children, or les enfants, under 3 years of age from the effects of television. France's Minister for Culture and Communication, Christine Albanel, issued a cry of alarm to parents in June about channels dedicated 24 hours a day to baby-targeted programming. In a newspaper interview, she calls them a danger and urged parents not to use them to help their children get to sleep. She was referring to two foreign channels that can be seen in France on cable television, Baby First TV and Baby TV. Interesting, I've never heard of those. The council's ruling aims to prevent the development of such programming on French channels. It also orders French cable operators that air foreign channels with programs for babies to broadcast warning messages to parents. The messages will read, "Watching television can slow the development of children under three, even when it involves channels aimed specifically at them." The ruling cites health experts as saying that interaction with other people is crucial to early child development. Television viewing hurts the development of children under 3 years old and poses a certain number of risks, encouraging passivity, slow language acquisition, overexcitedness, troubles with sleep and concentration, as well as dependence on screens, the ruling said. When Baby First TV first aired in the United States in 2006, it escalated an already heated national debate. The American Academy of Pediatrics has said babies should be kept away from television altogether. Baby First TV and other companies say their products are designed to be watched by babies and parents together in an interactive manner. Critics say such channels are used as a babysitter. Baby TV is owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. The three companies behind Baby First TV are Regency Enterprises, a film and television production company that is a partner of News Corp, Fox's Entertainment. Cardon NV, an investment group based in the Netherlands and Israel. And Bellico Capital, a private Los Angeles-based investment fund. And so much for the French news. We find that pretty interesting that we have been telling the public for the last several years, at least I have on my radio broadcasts and guest appearance on other shows, that mind control is prevalent. And here they have picked the magic number 3, which is used by the Illuminati, in mind controlling their own offspring. How interesting that now these international pediatrics associations are identifying the issue at least up to 3 years old. I find it a bit alarming that they're asking for children to begin interacting with people. That could be dangerous too, with all the things that are going on these days. Anyway, that said, I'd like to invite my co-host on the TNT Hour, special guest, who is a broadcaster on RBN. He has his own show, the Road Warrior Radio Show, which is heard Monday through Fridays at 9 p.m. Pacific. And his name is Chris Hinckley. Chris, welcome to the TNT Hour.
Good afternoon.
I heard a phone ringing. I think someone's trying to reach you.
Yes, yeah, somebody forgot to hit what is it? I can't even think of what it's called now. It's the Do Not Disturb button.
Oh.
That's what it is.
Well, how did you like my French accent there?
Very nice. It started out as kind of a I don't know. I thought we were going for. I was hearing the words "Ein Reich" for a minute, and then all of a sudden it translated to French. It was good. It was a good transition.
Yeah.
English, German, French.
Yeah, you picked that up. All right. Well, actually, I could have read it in French, but nobody would understand unless they spoke French. So, it's written in English, actually, but. I have that ability to sort of translate on the fly, and I had to quickly decide: do I say this like English or put the French spin on it? And I guess it would end up sounding like French if I did it too much. So, but I find that extremely interesting. France is basically a socialistic type of society, And they have a Hungarian president right now who is in cahoots with the Bush cabal in Washington, D.C., and that this slipped through the cracks and they were able to at least enact such a warning through the mainstream media, especially in light of Rupert Murdoch's network owning Baby TV, found it rather interesting. And we want to thank Renee for sending that story out to us. Shows that people, at least in France, are aware of the mind control and the fact that they're trying to take over the next generation of kids with this insane TV programming. I mean, where is the intrinsic value in having an infant under 3 years of age being hypnotized and mind controlled by the idiocy that they show? Look what they show for grown-ups. You can imagine what kids are getting.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I was going to say you probably want to know my thoughts on that. And the first thing that comes to mind for me when you're reading that is the the report from Alan W. Dulles to J. Edgar Hoover back in 56, the CIA memo that's actually on the internet, you can, the listeners can go to mindcontrolforums.com/CIA-wash.htm. And the text of that memo from Alan W. Dulles, who of course at the time was the DCI, Director of Central Intelligence, to J. Edgar Hoover, Director of the FBI at the time, was the report in 1956 on brainwashing, and it basically, I mean, this is the memo at the highest levels that says exactly what you just said. You know, I mean, you see it and it's scandalous and shocking, and you know, we should all be concerned, but that's always the first thing that comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of like going up to someone that's just given themselves a heroin fix and telling them that drugs aren't good for them.
Right.
they're going to look at you and with that glazed look in their eyes and say, well, you know, what do you mean? You know,
right.
I've just gotten my fix here. You know, I'm in another space and I don't really care to even pay attention to what you're saying, let alone try to understand it or take it in and let it affect the buzz that I've just given myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's the apathy is part of the problem. It's a direct reflection of what the technology is doing to people. And, and it's, you see it now in the world events. Okay. We've got the Olympics going on. I watched part of the opening ceremonies. Particularly, I was interested in what was going on at 8 p.m. on the 8th of August when they launched these games that are just a distraction. And it wasn't a coincidence that this war in Georgia began, and the media spin was prepared before they launched this event, because right away the media started lying about what was going on. How do we know they were lying? Well, there were some interviews on Fox News. I think you've even reported that recently on your show on RBN.
Yeah.
I think you played the audio of the young lady that was praising the Russian soldiers for saving them.
Amanda Kokoyeva was her name. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a South Ossetian girl that lives in Southern California.
Yeah, and the fact that the media, Fox, basically had eggs on their face because of, and I say eggs with plural, because when they brought the aunt on also, I think it was the aunt.
Yes.
She verified the story, and both times they had to cut the testimony of these people. And I say testimony because it's not just a first-hand account, it's really unveiling what's going on in the truth behind their statements that the Russians didn't attack per se, and that they were quelling this disturbance. Now if they chose they had to bomb some buildings, do we get the truth about what's happening? Well, we're not getting the truth about Iraq two times. We haven't gotten the truth about Saddam Hussein. We haven't gotten the truth about Osama bin Laden or who the real terrorists are. We haven't gotten the truth about 9/11. We haven't gotten the truth about Waco nor Oklahoma City. If we just examine these things, and we could go back to, all the way to the USS Liberty in 1967. And again, we have this obfuscation of the truth. And every time Israel's name comes up in it, and somewhere in the background, for those that really look into this thing, and even Israel was mentioned in this article from France. Don't you find that compelling? That it's obvious who's controlling the media. It's obvious whose agenda they're pushing. Though they deny it at every turn, it shows up in all the evidence, all of it, and the overall apathy and lack of responsibility on those who are permitting this to happen, as well as the apathy and the ignorance of the public, despite our efforts to educate the public and bring these these stories forward to show people there are simple explanations for what's going on, and you're just buying into more of the claptrap designed to take away your freedom. Comments?
2 days ago on my show, I said that I made kind of a, well, what could be construed as a defamatory statement, but I think it's as close to the truth and as honest as we can be. I said that on July 14th, the United States declared war on South Ossetia through the overt declaratory act of sending troops into Georgia for the preemptive readiness exercise called Operation Immediate Response. And Reuters reported on that July 15th. They said that we sent 1,000 troops to Georgia. And in fact, the Army Times story that was reported Sunday, August 17th, mentioned that we still have troops over there and that they're going to remain there. In fact, it says, I actually just grabbed an excerpt from it. It says about 70 U.S. military trainers, quote unquote, who were in Georgia during the August 8th invasion will remain in the country, officials said August 14th. As recently as July, about 1,000 U.S. soldiers and Marines participated in a combat skills training exercise with Georgian forces in that country. Operation Immediate Response 2008 ended less than 10 days before Russian forces invaded. Well, two things are interesting. That, first of all, you know, before those two things, that comes from the Army Times. You can go to armytimes.com and find that. But that's not some crazy conspiratorial blogger. That's the Army Times. What's interesting about the Russian media outlet reported on August 7th, U.S. military instructors command hirelings in Georgia. Thousands of mercenaries fighting Georgia in a burning conflict with South Ossetia. They're commanded by U.S. military instructors anyway. So we're not denying the fact that it's what really should be called false flag out in the open, because it's us commanding under the guise of instructing. And I mean, it was the overt declaratory act. The other thing that's interesting is even the mainstream media reported that the initial incursion and the initial shelling was by Georgia. And that's what sparked this whole conflict, at least from all outward appearances. I believe that this goes back years and years in preparatory planning. But the point is, Georgia was the first to invade. The incursion was begun by Georgia, and who was commanding those forces? That was us. And so the conclusion I come to is that you have these two big bullies, that's us and Russia, just kind of banging around like a bull in a china closet over there, and South Ossetia got absorbed. In fact, we know that a state of emergency has been declared with the South Ossetian government, and they call it de facto government. They don't even recognize it's a government, even though it's been an independent country since about 1992, shortly after the dissolution of the Soviet Union. But George Bush, in his speech this morning before the VFW, said that South Ossetia belongs to Georgia. And I think that's really what this amounts to. We don't hear, like you just pointed out, you know, the story of Amanda Kokoyeva and her aunt telling the truth. And like you said, you know, when her aunt seconded the story and said, I want to make it clear that, you know, so the people know that we thank the Russian people and the Georgia is guilty, not the Georgian people, she said, but, you know, Georgian president, obviously, Saakashvili, she said he needs to resign, and that's when she got cut off. We don't hear from them, though. You know, it seems, like you said, I mean, we hear one side of the story, and I don't mean one side of the Pacific, because we get both sides of the Pacific, but it's banging back around between these two non-choices. We never hear, like you said, from Iraq. We never hear from them, and we're not going to hear from South Ossetia either on this. So
Well, even to go further, now I don't hear it. I didn't hear anything defamatory in any of the comments you made, other than, you know, when you're pointing out the truth, there's no defamation. And then who are you singling out? You know, you're mm-hmm. talking about the character of a person. Who might that be? You
right.
know, let's look a bit deeper though. And you know that, since January of 2007, I have been reporting on, something. I sort of jumped on the bandwagon, on the back of Christopher Story's research through the International Currency Review and then the website postings that he has been making, really going back to 2003, 2004, that time period, and heavily in 2005, where he exposed the Wantagate embezzlement of trillions of dollars targeted initially for the U.S. Treasury. Now, what that actually was, what the cover story was, I think, was partially a veil to hide massive, even greater money laundering and theft from treasuries around the world, and monies put into offshore accounts under the auspice of facilitating intelligence work, mainly in the CIA. Well, there is a rogue faction of CIA agents headed up by George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton is involved in it as well. And now the current administration on every level is tapping into those funds. Wanta has again been compromised, and Christopher Story has distanced himself from Wanta because of the various types of sting operations that he and those in our government have orchestrated to discredit Story's reporting. Now, is everything that Story reports the truth? Well, as best, I think his intentions are well-meaning. I think maybe at times some of the facts could be checked a little bit further, but keep in mind that while one is trying to discern what is actually going on, there's a lot of informational spin going on, what we would call disinformation. And this is intended to mislead us, to keep us from arriving at the truth, to keep their heads above water because they are under multinational criminal indictments. And there have been numerous payments, as many as 159, maybe 160 payments to representatives of other foreign governments. Some of these have been made through the UN or made through diplomatic bureaus around the world, specifically here in the United States. And Putin, Vladimir Putin, who is now the Prime Minister of Russia, has been owed $30 billion and has not been paid that money. Christopher Story reports that he has added $57 billion of interest to that. Now, how he has arrived at that, I don't know. But the total sum he is expecting is $87 billion, and he gave a deadline. And it so happens that the deadline for this payment coincided with this Georgian attack. So it's a diversion to draw attention away from the fact that Putin has demanded this $87 billion. In fact, he had a deadline set for this past Monday. So we're talking about the day before yesterday. Our government, this rogue faction of thieves that has been stealing this money from the American taxpayers, from the Treasury, and putting it in offshore accounts and using it to bail out the failing banks and brokerage firms that are in dire trouble because they've been stealing their clients' money and putting it in offshore accounts, along with the Justice Department. They're doing the same thing. This is being uncovered. These foreign accounts have been frozen as they're found. Some transactions have been intercepted in real time during a visit that Bush made to England a few months ago and then to Ireland He was caught red-handed with Gordon Brown opening up new bank accounts in Ireland. And Scotland Yard went in there on a tip from Christopher Story himself and discovered the accounts. This is all being kept out of the mainstream media. This is really what's going on behind the scenes. There's just this massive theft, this massive money laundering going on. And so what do they do to divert our attention? They start a proxy war. They entice somebody. They bribe them. They entice them into committing these atrocious acts of violence and murder upon unsuspecting unaware people, really, and then they get the media to spin the reason for this and blame Russia. Putin is owed at least $87 billion. That's quite a chunk of change for anybody, even for him. And so he's expecting that money. He's not being paid. He's being blackmailed, and now he's ramping it up a notch. He's rearming all of the short range missiles with long-range nuclear missiles on all their ships and submarines. That's one thing that's taking place. You've not heard a lick about this in the media, have you? And really, you haven't heard about the money laundering either. And that would bring the whole house of cards tumbling down if it hit the mainstream media. So that's my intuitive appraisal of what's going on.
That's interesting. You know, there's the Peruvian treaty. There are some things on the periphery that I guess I'm curious about, and see, you know, I guess what your thoughts are on this. The Peruvian trust or the Peruvian treaty, does that factor into that at all, especially with the situation that's going on down there with the state of emergency that's recently been declared? I guess is something that, you know, you talk about intuitive research. That's something that's kind of been, I don't know. It really makes me scratch my head and kind of go, wonder what that's all about.
Are you speaking maybe about the Russell Trust? Yes. Okay. Yeah. Most likely. Do I know that with 100% certainty? No. Maybe 99.9%.
Yeah.
It's been talked about, and of course, that it's been spun and put out there on various websites. The VK Durham saga, mm-hmm. It very well could be. Now, if anyone wants to research that, it would be beyond the means of today's show to go into that in great depth.
Yeah.
But I can say that there have been gold holdings, let's say, gold funds that have been in a way used to finance developmental projects around the planet. The Hirohito gold has played a role in that. That is the gold that was buried in over 100 locations, at least 137 different locations in the Philippines. And Ferdinand Marcos discovered that gold. You have the Soeharto gold in Indonesia. And trust me when I say this, that Barack Obama's sudden appearance on the scene has something to do with that as well. The goings on there with that aspect of the gold, because we're talking about possibly in the quadrillions of dollars worth of gold deposits. It's beyond trillions. And it's well beyond hundreds of trillions.
Hmm.
And so you have the Suharto gold eventually became the Sukarno gold, and it's being controlled by the Riyadis in Indonesia. That's a wealthy family that's been trusted with the dispensation or the disbursement of treasury checks. These gold deposits are given checks that can be used for investment purposes. And I know of such a group that's got several hundred trillion dollars in these funds, and these are being stolen. These are being used to rescue the banks, and the these brokerage firms that have been involved in the same money laundering. They're actually facilitating. They're conspirators in the money laundering activities. Robert Rubin at Citibank is well known, and he's foremost in this Wantagate scandal. They have sent $6.2 trillion to rescue these funds through one of the Saudi princes and the Queen of England. And that $6.2 trillion is a lot more money than what these firms need to give them sort of a temporary influx of liquidable assets that they can pay out to people they owe money to in trying to, number one, keep their companies afloat, but number two, mask further the money laundering activities that are going on. So again, this is something that Christopher Story has written about on his website, worldreports.org, and I make it a point if I feel that one of his articles applies to what is going on to put that information out there. And it's on my website, directlightproductions.com, under news. I've been posting many of those articles there. It's up. I'm not asking anyone to believe what I'm saying or what Christopher Story is saying, but if you do some research, you'll find that that these acts of war that are being perpetrated have everything to do with the flow of the money going around the planet. And the raiding of these gold deposits, which were used as collateral to bring forth the funding for certain types of developmental projects, has everything to do with it. So to answer your question in a long-winded manner, yes, I feel they do have something to do with it. And I hope that explanation sort of points out that this is not just going on there in Peru, but in these other countries.
Yeah. Well, that's you know, what my suspicion was as well. Here's a fun point, if I may, you know, ask another question. I've been looking into a project, you know, based on what we've seen happen. I keep saying, I guess the reason, to back up a little bit, the reason that I make the statement that, and this is, you know, the one that I say is could be construed as defamatory, that the United States declared war on South Ossetia on July 14th. The reason that I make that statement is because this administration, as much or more than any other in the history of this country, has operated under a P2OG directive, the proactive preemptive operations group directive, and it is a proactive preemptive administration. And the more that you dig into that, I've been researching a lot of documents from the Rand Corporation, for example, and the more that you dig into that, the more that there is irrefutable, conclusive, massive amounts of documentable evidence that not only was this something that was being discussed, but I mean they were planning in ways that are almost beyond comprehension. You know, statistical probabilities and likelihoods and war game scenarios and symposiums and it's crazy. And so, you know, to I guess get to my question, you know, that's something that I've been researching, and with that, looking into a particular document, there are a couple that really stick out in my mind. You know, this is obviously in connection with what happened after 9/11, our rush to war, and then, of course, you know, the creation, the subsequent creation of the Department of Homeland Security, the changes, you know, the post 9/11 world that we live in, according to the decider, and his confusion, by the way, he said this morning once again that it was 19 hijackers armed with box cutters that were responsible for 9/11. I think he needs to go read the congressional record and the 35 articles of impeachment. But
yeah, or read Dr. Kasem Khalil's Wrongly Blamed, where you know he's actually located some of these terrorists.
Exactly. And they've died, how many of them? I mean, it's what, six of them have died three or four times now, anyway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And and yet they're still, you know, gainfully employed after they've died three or four times. And,
yeah. It's coincidental, Chris, that you bring that very topic up, because my guest tonight on Evident Footprints, which is being widely distributed in a newsletter from BBS, as well as by myself and anyone who's helping get the message out, Vincent Bugliosi, the author of the book The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, is going to be my guest on Evident Footprints tonight. And so we are going to be talking about specifically those 35 articles of impeachment and his prosecution in absentia of this administration, particularly George W. Bush, for the lies and deceptions that he has determined warrant not just impeachment but prosecution for the murder of the soldiers, the murder of the Iraqi people, and I'm sure, I haven't talked to him about this, but we could tie in 9/11, because that was just another Reichstag fire mimicking what the Nazis did in Germany before World War II.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And speaking of the number of casualties, you can go to, I know that website libertyforlife.com has a copy of the VA's report on the numbers. The report clearly says that 6.8 million men and women have gone through the revolving door over in the Middle East since Desert Storm. So between Desert Storm and Iraqi Freedom, 6.8 million. And there is, when you do the math real quick, you come up with a number of 2.3 million men and women that are either dead or disabled since 91, and a high number of those. You know, most estimates put it around 500,000. It's actually more than that are casualties because of this most recent situation.
Yeah. Well, we've been reporting on my show as far back as last October, November, that there have been, and on other shows as well, there have, at that time, there were at least 1.2 Iraqi civilians that had been killed, murdered, really, and that there were somewhere between 2.5 to 4 million, and now I hear it's up closer to 4.3 million Iraqis who have been displaced and are living in foreign countries in tent communities or just out in the desert or the mountains someplace without even having those amenities, without food and water, without toilet facilities, without clothing, and forget about any conveniences of a modern society. These people are just at subsistence level, if they're even able to maintain that. So the figures, and at that time, the government was saying about 4,000 soldiers had been killed, or it was approaching 4,000. It was something like 3,897. It was a ridiculous figure, because we had been tabulating that there were at least 250,000 soldiers that had returned from the United States missing arms and legs, and the casualties were much higher. They play games with the figures and they lie. Period.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it. So are we going to get accurate information about how many of our soldiers are dying? The people would be outraged if they knew the real numbers, just like they would be outraged if the mainstream media came out clean and said, "Hey, we lied about 9/11." It's quite obvious.
So exactly.
That's not going to happen at this juncture, because the media knows they would be strung up as well.
Well, it's interesting. You know, so many things come to mind, because this is all part of this research project that I'm doing. It's crazy. Anybody that's interested, I would suggest, if you really want to know what was behind the rush to war, it was all research sponsored by the Army and taxpayers' dollars. You can go to RAND Corporation and download PDF documents like Protecting the Homeland, Insight from Army War Games by Richard Brennan. That's a good one, which was published in 2002, but right in the preface, the first page says, this paper was written before the horrific events of September 11, 2001. And then you read through it, and it's all about, well, you know, if September 11 happens, and then, you know, you start to see these trends. And as you know, I mean, basically what you come away with when you read this and other studies that they've done is they, you know, I'm calling Hegelian dialectic at this point solution problem reaction, because they create the solution, then cause the problem that precipitates the reaction, and then there's the solution. And so if you look at their reports and see what has happened over the last, you know, several decades, then you can come to no other conclusion that they're either prophets or they're involved in the pre-planning and implementation of war. But the question that I was going to ask, related to that document that I mentioned, the Protecting the Homeland document, I hate even saying that word, but...
Yeah, that's another fascist term that that mirrors what Nazi Germany did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is an interesting... there's a lot of information that's in here, and I know we don't have much time, so I'll just go to this point. But my question before I read this, related to the other discussion about the Russell Trust, is... there's a point that's mentioned in here, and I'm wondering if this situation that we're discussing, speaking of the money, is related to that, in the sense that this little excerpt will point out in creating another front, especially with the timing. Anyway, this is talking about war game scenarios that they're playing in anticipation of a situation like what we have now, and this particular issue that they're addressing they call counter power protection operations. And red team would be the bad guys, blue team would be the good guys. Anyway, it says the red team leadership sought to create chaos, delay deployment, and this is again is in a wartime or a war game scenario. Red team leadership sought to create chaos, delay deployment, and disrupt the provision of support to deployed forces by attacking targets inside the U.S., a large obstacle confronting the red team. In its attempt to pursue such a strategy was its limited capability to place agents inside the U.S. However, and this was written back in 97, by the way.
Yeah, when however, at the same time they were doing the project for the New American Century.
Exactly. And yeah. this comes out of what's called Army After Next Directive. Mm-hmm. And if somebody goes in and searches Army After Next, that's actually the child born out of a program called Army 21. Anyway, it says, however, given a 5 or 10 year planning window, and where are we now, 10 years later, mm-hmm. the red team concluded that it would have sufficient time to establish an agent network inside the United States. Anyway, here's the point, though. It says, teams also concluded that any physical attacks in the United States would have to be timed to coincide with the initiation of hostilities or the deployment of U.S. forces because of the high likelihood that agents or teams would be compromised after beginning of hostilities. In essence, the Red Team wanted to open a second front for the U.S. military. The continental United States would be the second front. Finally, all the Red Teams concluded that the mere existence of a credible threat of attack in the United States would significantly degrade the ability of the U.S. military to move rapidly during the deployment process, thus buying them the time necessary to achieve their objectives in theater. So my question is, I guess with the situation that we see, like you said, I mean, the obfuscatory nature of what's gone on, you know, the Georgia-Russia conflict, which I don't think it should be called that, and the situation with Iran and the massive buildup of naval forces in the Gulf, do you think it could be related to exactly what they're describing here as a second front or even a third front?
Well, we know that there exist army personnel from China in the Southwest, particularly in the region of New Mexico. This has been reported for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm.
And these are permitted intrusions. This is going on with the knowledge of the Army and the Marines and of course our government. I mean, they talk about securing our borders, and this is going on. Russian troops up in the Northwest have been tracked for miles by people driving down the highway, and it's incredible that this is going on. UN vehicles parked all over upstate Minnesota, and Lord knows where else.
Down in Texas.
Yeah. Also down in Texas, and they deny that this SPP highway, this transcontinental highway, is being built through Texas all the way up to Canada, turning with intentions of turning Kansas City into a Mexican port. It's ridiculous. So just piece together all these little pieces of the puzzle, and you know who's involved. This is the attempt to turn us into a one government enslaved global society, and with the intention of murdering or incarcerating and drugging and torturing anyone that stands up against it. But we've got to show courage and stand up against it. We're not fear-mongering. They're the ones doing this, and we have to be perceptive and discerning as to what is really going on. We do have the power within us. Chris, we're out of time. I look forward to the next opportunity for us to continue this discussion. And you're going to be on my Evident Footprints show this month, coming month of September. So I'm sure we can talk about this. I urge people to do the research. We both do. We're not asking you to believe anything. That's what the government's and the media's job is, to get you to believe. We want you to know. And so empower yourself. Spend a little bit of time researching these things, and you'll find out that there's a lot of truth in what we're revealing to you. And the mainstream media would not dare talk about this. They would not dare talk about it. And that in and of itself should be enough proof to you that we intend to bring the truth to you. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. And I hope you have a chance to listen to Vincent Bugliosi on Evident Footprints tonight, 10 p.m.
I've been telling folks about it all week on my show, and I can't wait to listen. That's going to be great.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Special thanks to Don Newsom, also our Monday host of the TNT Hour on BBS Radio, for making this program possible and for giving us the opportunity. Quick word, we have a new news site within BBS coming out, and it's called infiltrators.com. And Chris Hinckley, today's guest, is also going to be a contributing journalist to that. So I'm happy to have you on board with that. That's going to be very exciting, Chris.
My pleasure.
Let's wish our audience a wonderful day, and see you all tonight, 10 p.m. Pacific time, when special guest on Evident Footprints is Vincent Bugliosi. In the meantime, have a great day.